good evening. I am so excited to get to teach tonight. It's going to be a little bit less of preaching, a little bit more of teaching. And it is the last Friday Fire before our retreat. God is doing something very singular right now in our church, really stirring up a fresh hunger and a desire for more of his presence. So I felt like it would be very appropriate today to talk about the topic that we'll be talking about. Before I reveal what the topic will be about, I would like, your flesh is not going to be happy. Your flesh is not going to like it. The enemy is not going to like it. But I'm going to assume that if you are here tonight, that there's a certain level of hunger and there's already a stirring in your heart for this. So I'm going to assume that this is God-led and that the reason why you're here tonight and whatever you're going to be receiving tonight is going to prove to be confirmation tonight. It's not going to be something that you're going to be forced into or guilted into. Yes, and I want to make sure that that's very, very clear. Very clear. What we're going to talk about tonight is fasting. We're going to be talking about fasting tonight. If we, are we good with the slides? Doesn't seem to be. All right, thank you. So we will be talking about fasting tonight. And as we go through this teaching tonight, this is one of those topics that when I talk to people about this, there's like people react in very funny ways. Sometimes it's like, people feel like very funny when you talk about fasting. Like, am I not a good enough Christian? Or do you feel like I particularly should be fasting? It's one of those things that I feel like it's very hard to talk about very openly and boldly because people in different seasons, they take it very differently. So I'm going to be talking about fasting tonight, assuming that this is something that the Lord is placing, not just on my heart, but also collectively as a house. God is really calling us into a season of consecration. So fasting, as we go through tonight's teaching, is not going to be merely just about fasting, abstaining from food. You can translate it as maybe even media fasting or certain things that you know that the Lord is asking you to abstain from in a season of consecration. So I want you to take fasting more similar to the term consecration, more so than abstaining from food or water fasting or whatever traditional fasting definition you have in your mind. All right, so fasting. Oh, hold on one sec. Yeah. All right, so this is a quote from Mike Bickle, and it says, "I believe that the Lord is calling us right now to shift out of the common mode of Christian ministry into a spiritually violent lifestyle of fasting and prayer. The message of voluntary weakness through prayer and fasting is an offensive message to the church. Most ministries end up believing the lie that there's more power found by bypassing the weakness of prayer and fasting and engaging in frenetic activity rather than taking the road less traveled and pouring our time through prayer and fasting into the presence of God. Too often, they measure in the here and now, but in the big picture of church history, it is clear that when people have persistently chosen to pray and fast, God has always proved true by releasing a greater dimension of his power. It may take years, sometimes even entire lifetimes, but it happens without exception." So this is not just coming from somebody who is just hypothesizing or just talking about the theology or the doctrine behind fasting. This is someone who adheres to fasting not as an event, not just as, well, in my lifetime it's been 2-3 times, but this is someone who adheres to the premise of fasting as a Christian lifestyle. It's a lifestyle, not an event, not an isolated moment in a particular moment in your life, but it's part of what Christians are called to do. So tonight I'm going to start with four myths of fasting. Four myths of fasting. First myth It is reserved for the super Christian. So there's only a certain kind of Christian that really is about fasting. And the rest, kind of, they get off scot-free. But the fact is, fasting was an expected discipline in both the Old Testament and the New Testament eras. For example, Moses fasted at least two recorded 40-day periods, and Jesus fasted 40 days and reminded his followers to fast, saying, when you fast, not if you fast. So it was already a given that fasting was going to be happening as part of their personal devotion and part of their walk as a Christian. Let's move on to a second myth. It is characterized by suffering and sacrifice. Like, when you think about fasting, you don't think like butterflies and like, yay, I can't wait to get into it. You kind of like have to brace yourself for it. It's like medicine that you know is good for you, but you don't want to take. It's kind of like you take it from that angle. It is characterized by suffering and sacrifice. But when Jesus talked about fasting, he actually characterized it by reward. So he said, when you fast, in this passage from Matthew 6, he says, when you fast, your Father who sees in secret will reward you openly. He didn't talk about the suffering part. He didn't talk about the, I'm going to give you a pat on the back because you're such a devout Christian and you're doing something that other Christians aren't doing. He talks about the reward as if it was a privilege to be able to fast, knowing that there is something on the other end. Next myth. It is a gift I do not possess. It's like akin to celibacy. Like, I do not possess this gift. So too bad. Yeah, this is just not for me. Maybe somebody who feels called to fasting, maybe they should be the ones to really pour out in fasting. Well, the fact is, God gives us grace to fast. If we ask for grace to fast, we will receive it. This is in 2 Peter. Many fear fasting. However, the fear of fasting is worse than the fasting itself. This is very true. It is a lie that the demands of our modern pace of life make fasting impractical for today's Christian. So this is also coming from Mike Bickle. So it is not something that we should, you know, put aside for a certain kind of Christian or somebody with a certain kind of gifting, but this is something that should be happening at a somewhat consistent fashion in every believer's life. And there are great rewards, not just sacrifices, but rewards that are emphasized regarding fasting. Now, the last myth we'll talk about is it is impractical for the modern-day Christian. So it's a great idea if I had nothing else to do, if I could just devote myself just to fasting. But the modern pace of life, it just makes it very impractical. And I'm a bad steward of other things that I should be doing. And there's a lot of different reasons why this is maybe something reserved for a certain kind of person. But on the contrary, fasting actually awakens us to the fact that we often find ourselves enslaved to our fleshly desires. So it exposes something that is already there, which is why we find fasting so unpleasant. Our bodies are conditioned to be our masters. When they cry for food, we quickly feed them. When they're denied food, they scream louder and louder at us. We are enslaved to our fleshly desires. And the only way that often this is exposed is when those desires are curbed, when those desires are denied. And all of a sudden, you didn't think you had an issue with food, but all of a sudden you do. You didn't think that you had an issue with prayer, but all of a sudden you do. So fasting, especially for the modern day Christian, is a very practical practice. Especially because of the pace in which we live and the way in which often unthinking we live enslaved to our fleshly desires. There's no other way to actually expose that oftentimes. So I'm going to explain the picture that we showed at the very beginning. This is a picture of two different dogs. The first one, the really cute one, is a spirit. The second one is the flesh. So the question that I want to ask you is, which one do you think is getting fed more? the flesh. Yes, that is why it is completely overpowering the spirit. Oftentimes, what we spend 90%, 95% of the time feeding is the flesh and not the spirit. If you think about your waking hours, think, you know, in a 24-hour period, there's 18 hours or so that you are awake. Out of those 18 hours, how many hours of that time period do you actually deliberately spend on feeding the spirit? Not on a Sunday. We're talking about like a Monday, a Thursday, a Tuesday. So on a day when it's just, you know, business as usual, how often do you feed the spirit and how often do you feed the flesh? So this is a very kind of, you know, kind of funny picture, but it actually rings very true in the way that we lead our lives. We often feed the flesh. We cater to the flesh so much more than the spirit. The spirit gets like maybe 10 minutes in the morning, maybe an hour at night. Then we kind of gorge a little bit like on a Saturday or on a Sunday or on a Friday evening. But on the most part, our spirit isn't fed as much as the flesh is. So now we're going to talk about what actually fasting is not. So this is what fasting is not. It's not a method or tool to win God's audience, nor a bargaining chip so that God has to speak to us or bless us. It is not an exchange of sacrifice in order to obtain blessings. So in other words, it is not a superstitious strategy. Like if I rub this lamp or if I carry this amulet or if I do this one technique, God is going to bless me. It's not a superstitious strategy, nor is it a source of spiritual arrogance, like a badge of honor for the super Christian that is into fasting. So these are things that fasting is not. Secondly, so what is fasting? Fasting is a posture of the heart, first and foremost. It's a posture of the heart. It's an outward demonstration of an inward reality. So you can have something on the outward. As long as the inward is true, then it is true fasting. But if you have the outward demonstration without the inward reality, it is not fasting. It is a sign of spiritual hunger. It is an act of humbling oneself. It is a period of consecration and a form of spiritual warfare. Although there are many byproducts of fasting, the primary purpose of fasting is to get more of God Himself. In other words, there's going to be many things that happen as you fast. Your spiritual senses, they are heightened. Your focus, your ability to devote extended periods of time without like it being broken up by meals or other different things that occupy your mind at certain hours of the day, you know, you are able to really delve into prayer, delve into certain things that are required an extended period of time and a certain kind of focus. That is very true. And there are also times when you fast for a particular purpose, like I'm going to be fasting particularly for the salvation of my parents, or I'm going to be fasting particularly for the breakthrough in this aspect, or for financial provision, or for different things. And all these things are going to be good, but they're always going to come as a byproduct of the primary purpose, which is getting more of God Himself. So whenever you go into a fast, a good question to actually ask yourself and search your heart for any kind of entitlement, for any kind of that kind of superstitious strategy, kind of angle that you would take at fasting would be, if you were to get nothing out of these, 3 days, 7 days, 21 days, 40 days, if you were to get nothing out of this except more of God Himself, would you feel like this is a success? Would you feel like it's time well spent? Would you feel like this was an endeavor worth going through? So that's a very key question to ask whenever you're about to go into fasting. Now I'm going to highlight 4 different aspects that I already talked about fasting. The first one is going to be seeking. The aspect of seeking. There's 4 different aspects that we're going to be talking about tonight. But the first one we're going to be talking about is the aspect of seeking. So in a passage in Matthew 5, it says, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied." It is with this promise of being satisfied that you are able to go through hunger and thirst. This is a passage from Ezra. It says, "So we fasted and earnestly prayed that our God would take care of us, and He heard our prayer." This was part of the process of seeking the Lord. It wasn't just prayer. It wasn't just fasting. It was fasting and praying. And this is how the result of it was, he heard our prayer. We went through this period of seeking, this consecrated period of seeking, where we fasted and earnestly prayed, and he heard our prayer. And lastly, this is a promise that is found in 2 Chronicles chapter 7. It says, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and heal their land. These are great promises that are at the very tail end of this. If my people who are called by my name, this if then, if they humble themselves, pray, seek my face, and turn from their wicked ways, then this is the result. I will hear from heaven, I'll forgive their sin, and heal their land. So this is an aspect of seeking, and this is partly what Pastor Aaron was exhorting a lot of the leaders this past weekend for us to do, to seek earnestly in prayer. You can't say you've earnestly sought the Lord, that you've exhausted every possible avenue, if you haven't even just thought about fasting and prayer. At least thought about it. It doesn't mean that you're called to fast and pray every time, but it does mean that that should come into the radar sometime when you are serious about seeking the Lord and asking for more of him. Now, the second aspect of prayer that we'll be talking about is humility and fasting. So it's a way of humbling ourselves before the Lord, and this is kind of related to what 2 Chronicles was talking about. I humbled myself with fasting. This is what Psalm 35:13 says. This is King David. And he says he equates humbling himself before the Lord with fasting and prayer. This is not just somebody who's in the tabernacle or somebody who's just able to spend, 7 days, 21 days, 40 days in the presence of the Lord. But this is also a way of humbling oneself of somebody who's very much engaged in the world as well. We're going to look at a passage from Daniel 9. And as you know, he was very much, had a very busy life, was very in tune with what was happening in his time, in his culture. And this is what Daniel 9 says. So I turned to the Lord God and pleaded with him in prayer and petition, in fasting, and in sackcloth and ashes. I prayed to the Lord my God and confessed, Lord, the great and awesome God who keeps his covenant of love with those who love him and keep his commandments, we have sinned and done wrong. We have been wicked and have rebelled. We have turned away from your commands and laws. Now, this is someone who actually hadn't turned himself. He hadn't turned away from his commands and from his laws. He was interceding on behalf of his nation. He was interceding on behalf of somebody else. So this isn't just somebody who's humbling himself before the Lord and fasting for a need that he has, but he's humbling himself on behalf of somebody else before the Lord. I'm not going to push this too much because I don't want it to become like a religious or a legalistic kind of show of spiritual arrogance, but I challenge you. Fast and pray for somebody. Not just your own needs. Fast and pray for somebody that you've been praying for, somebody's breakthrough. You've been praying for somebody else's needs. It's one thing to say, I'll pray for you. And then occasionally whenever you remember, you lift up a prayer for them. It's even worse, if you say you'll pray for them and you don't pray, right? But I'm saying if you are wanting to walk with them through the process of seeking, of contending for certain things, I challenge you. Maybe the Lord is putting on your heart to not just pray on their behalf, but also fast on their behalf. And the Lord will hear your prayers, not just a need that you have and you're lifting up for yourself, but on behalf of somebody else. Now, it'd be nice, if this was all that Daniel 9 gave us. But then you see the result of this kind of humbling oneself and fasting just one chapter afterwards. And it says, this is an angel of the Lord coming to him. And he said to me, do not fear, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart to understand and to humble yourself before the Lord, your words were heard. And I have come because of your words. It wasn't on day 3, on day 7, on day 14, on day 21, once he had completed the 21 days of fasting and prayer. It was from the first day. When you turned yourself to me, that moment when you said the next 21 days are consecrated to fasting and prayer, from that first day, the Lord heard. He understood and he saw his heart. And he answered him from that first day. Now, this is the third aspect of fasting that we will be looking into, is consecration. There's an aspect of consecration. This is a passage from Joshua. This is before they actually crossed into the promised land. After 40 years of roaming in the desert, after 40 years of wandering in the wilderness, when they're on the brink of walking into their promised land, on the brink, right before that threshold, right before crossing that threshold, this is what Joshua 3 says they did. Then Joshua said to the people, "Consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you." And Joshua said to the priests, "Take up the Ark of the Covenant and pass on before the people." So consecration in itself, it's a setting apart for a sacred purpose. Setting apart, in other words, something that is holy for a sacred purpose. There's an aspect of setting apart a defined time for the express purpose of seeking God. It is limited, it is for a set purpose, and it is wholehearted and disruptive. Disruptive meaning you can't just go on with life or business as usual. The focus wasn't on what they were abstaining from, but on what the Lord was about to do. It's like a forward thinking, not just like, oh, it's going to be really miserable and hungry and, you know, miserable right now. But they're thinking forward. They're seeing what God is about to do. He's on the brink of doing. And this, with this kind of mindset, is the mindset that they go into consecrating, fasting, prayer. It is with anticipation and excitement. It's not with this, do I need to do this for you to move? Like, do I have to? Like, is it required or is it mandatory or is it just, you know, something that we are encouraged to do? There was a sense of like, I want to see the Lord moving so badly. Anything before that, anything leading us up to that point is nothing, is worth it. So that's a sense of consecration in fasting. And it is for a set time. It is limited. I was talking to Pastor John earlier today, and in previous seasons when we have talked about fasting, corporate fasting at New Philly, a really good analogy, an illustration that he had given in the past was, you know, when you play Mario or Mario for some people, Mario, there are, you know, when you, what happens when you get the star and you go, dun, 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 dun. Yes, there's a limited period of time of acceleration, a limited period of time where you can just go full throttle. You can accelerate during that limited period of time. Hopefully this is a good illustration for you what fasting is like. It's not like a dragging your feet for the next 7 days, you know. It's not that. It's a sense of like pressing into something, accelerating into something. And you have a limited window. It's not indefinite. It's a consecrated, limited time where you get to fast. You get to press in. You get to experience the Lord in a very supernatural, in a very singular kind of way that you can't outside of fasting. So hopefully this gets you excited about fasting. And the last aspect of fasting, it is warfare. It is spiritual warfare. I can't go into the theology of this because there's a lot of discrepancy, not discrepancy, a lot of disagreement and a lot of different discussions regarding this particular verse. It's Matthew 17:21. They're talking about this particular case of a demon-possessed man where it didn't seem to break off no matter how much they tried to cast him out, no matter what they tried to do. They weren't able to cast out this demon. And then Jesus comes and he heals this man. And then his disciples are a little bit embarrassed. Like, they were like, "In Jesus' name, be healed." And all these things would be happening. And then they get to this guy and it doesn't seem to break. And they're a little bit baffled by this and a little bit embarrassed as well. And later in private, they go to him and they say like, "So what was the deal with that? Like, what was that all about? I thought you said, you know, we cast it out and it's done. We do this and it's done. So what was that case about?" And Jesus says this, this kind of spirit, this kind of ailment does not go out except by prayer and fasting. This is a very mysterious verse. Like, you don't want to read into it too much. Like, you have to go through certain steps, you know, 1 through 4 for this kind, this category. And, you know, you don't want to read into it too much. But there is a certain dimension of mystery in the power that is released through prayer and fasting. Jesus doesn't give any more explanation to that other than that. He just says that and then moves on with ministry. So I'll just propose this to you. There is a particular power. There's this particular spiritual heightening that happens when you fast and you pray, when you seek the Lord this wholeheartedly, this set apart, this in such a focus, like with laser-like focus kind of way. And then going back to the passage in Daniel 10, when the angel of the Lord appeared to Daniel, this is after 21 days of fasting, but he said to him expressly on the first day, as soon as you turn to me with prayer and fasting, that's when I heard you. Something in the spiritual realm, something was launched into action. And this explanation comes in verses 13 through 14. This is what the angel says, Angel Gabriel. He says, the prince of Persia, so the principality of Persia, withstood me 21 days, but Michael, one of the chief priests, one of the chief angels, came to help me, for I was left there with the kings of Persia and came to make you understand what is about to happen to your people in the latter days. So don't focus on the second half of this passage, but focus on the very beginning. There was a spiritual war, a spiritual battle happening between this angel Gabriel with this prince of Persia, this principality of Persia. So something very real is happening during this 21 days that Daniel is fasting and praying. So here's Daniel fasting and praying, thinking, I don't hear anything from the Lord. I'm just seeking him in faith. I'm fasting in faith. And I know this is not going to be in vain. I know that this is supposed to be a joyful endeavor. So in faith, I'm going to push through the 21 days. He doesn't see anything happening during the 21 days. At the end of the 21 days comes this angel saying, like, you have no idea what was happening during the 21 days. Like, you thought nothing was happening. Something very real was happening in the spiritual realm. There was this battle going on between this prince of Persia and myself, and then Michael, one of the chief priests that came. So all this activity is happening in the spiritual realm while Daniel, in faith, was fasting and praying. So something was mobilized in the heavenlies while he was doing something as simple as humbling himself before the Lord in fasting and prayer. This happened, again, not like there's not a threshold. Like after the third day, that's when the angels say, like, well, okay, he means it and let's go. But it was from the first day. The first day he turned to the Lord in fasting and prayer. That's when all these things began to move in the spiritual realm. So something very real regarding fasting happens in the spiritual realm. And this is a form of spiritual warfare, a form of spiritual warfare. So hopefully this gives you a good, broad understanding of what fasting is about. It's not just about abstaining from food. It's not just about proving your loyalty or proving, you know, that you want something, you know, to a certain extent. It's so much bigger than that. It is consecration. It is seeking the Lord earnestly. It's humbling yourself before the Lord, knowing that the breakthrough is not going to come from a different strategy, a human effort or striving. It's going to come from the hand of the Lord in a supernatural way. And lastly, that it is a form of spiritual warfare. So fasting is a pretty exciting and pretty great and powerful thing that is at our disposal, not this like, ugh, last resort. Okay, nothing has happened. If nothing happens in 3 days, then maybe it's time to go into prayer. No, it's like an invitation. It's a calling forth of something even greater that we can step into through fasting. Now, very quickly, let me walk through some practical steps. First, you commit to fasting before the Lord. Before the Lord, not before man, not before a leader, not before anybody else, but first and foremost, before the Lord, and you expect the enemy and you expect the flesh to not be happy about it. That's natural. That's natural. If it's not in your heart already, it's not stirring by the Holy Spirit in you already, for someone to force you to fast, it's like the worst thing. It's the worst thing in the world. Like, you're going to hate every part of it. But if it's something that is served by the Holy Spirit and something that you're committing to before the Lord, it needs to be voluntary before the Lord, an act of love, an act of devotion, consecration, seeking, humbling before the Lord, then it's going to be a really joyful endeavor. And you have to expect the enemy in the flesh to not be happy about it. You can't go like 3 days into fasting, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm like so miserable. I'm so hungry. You can't be taken by surprise. Like, your flesh is not going to want it. Your flesh is going to resist it. The enemy is going to resist it. All of a sudden, people are going to want to buy you meals. All of a sudden, your newsfeed is going to be filled by, you know, like the tasty, like how to make all these meals, like really quickly. And everything looks so easy and like so juicy and so, you know, so delicious. At the moment, all of a sudden, your newsfeed is going to be filled by that. All of a sudden, like, you're going to have this birthday party or this, something's going to come. And you know that happens as soon as you decide, okay, I'm going to fast starting tomorrow. And then somebody calls you up and says, like, hey, do you have time tomorrow for dinner? I've been wanting to buy you, like, a steak dinner. And I know, you know, it's taken me months. But, you know, finally, my schedule has opened up. And this is the only day I can do it. Can you do it? It's going to happen. It's really funny how things happen. It's, you know, it's your friend. It's not the enemy. But, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like, all these things are going to happen. And it's going to come at a cost. So don't be, like surprised when things like this happen. You need to expect it to some extent. Second, determine what you'll be fasting from and what you'll be fasting for. So what you'll be fasting from, so abstaining from, and what you'll be fasting for. It can't just be about, okay, I'm not going to be eating solids for the next 5 days. And you're basically going on a diet for 5 days if you're not replacing it with something. You're abstaining from something to focus wholly on something else. So you need to be not just thinking about, all right, these are the things they're going to stay away from. For example, social media. I'm going to abstain from social media for the next week, and you're going to be twiddling your thumbs, like, for that period of time that you normally would. If you, like, go on Facebook for 3 hours a day, and for those 3 hours, you're going to be fasting into twiddling your thumbs for 3 hours a day. That's not feeding your spirit. You need to replace it with something, and you'd be fasting into something. So replace it with going into the Word. Replace it by, you know, reading a certain book or listening to certain preachers that, you know, stir up your spirit. You need to be fasting into something. Third step, very easy. Do it. Just do it. You've committed it before the Lord. You determine what it's going to be and even the period of time that you'll be doing it for. Just do it. I know that there are times when you're on the fence and you're just like, okay, God, you got to confirm it by a dream, by two prophetic words, and by some, you know what I mean? Like, you kind of like want him to like make it very clear to you. You need to hear the audible voice of God before you do it. Sometimes it's not that complicated. Sometimes it's you set yourself to do it. You set the parameters in which you're going to do it, and you just do it. You just do it. You got to take that first step. You got to skip that first meal. You got to stop, you know, you got to erase Facebook from your apps. You know, like, just do it. Just do it. It's a lot more simple than often we make it in our minds. And then after you've done it, please make sure to thank God, because it was by supernatural strength that you were able to go through it. It is something that is fueled by the Spirit. It is not by your self-discipline or your ability to like abstain from certain things in the flesh. It's going to be powered supernaturally by God. So thank God for it. You know, don't be like, oh, I finally made it through. I need a hamburger right now. Like, that's not the way that you want to break fast. You want to like celebrate what has happened for the last, you know, period of time that you consecrated before the Lord. Does that make sense? Very simple. Four steps. And maybe an additional step that I didn't write up here. As you do it, if you want accountability, talk to people about accountability. Some people, they misread or misinterpret the, you know, the verse that says, you know, when you're about to fast, like, do it in secret. Like, nobody needs to know. Like, nobody needs to know. It's very hard. You know, like, if somebody finds out, you're like, ah, there goes my reward. Like, why would you do that? The last 20 days, you know, I was on the 21st. You know, like, that's not what that verse means. That verse means do it joyfully. Don't be miserable all throughout. Do it unto the Lord and do it with joy. So accountability, if you need accountability, do it. You know, if you want to do it with somebody else, do it with somebody else and keep each other tabs. But don't be like, that verse, what it means is don't broadcast it to everybody. You know, like, oh, I'm so hungry. Like, oh my gosh, I'm so miserable. And they're like, are you okay? Oh my gosh, it's like my seventh day of fasting. And like, you know what I mean? Like, you don't need to do that. You don't need to do that. You don't need to broadcast it to everybody. You're doing it unto the Lord. But you don't need to like be so paranoid about somebody finding out that you can't let accountability know. No, let your accountability partners know. Bring people into the process. You know, even if there's somebody that the Lord is placing in your mind, even challenge them to do it. Doesn't need to be the same way. Doesn't need to be in the same period of time. But challenge them as well if the Lord is putting that on your heart. Very easy four steps. And very quickly, we're going to go through some practical guidelines for fasting. So it is a spiritual endeavor, and it's something that's very spiritual in nature, but you also have to take into account, you know, the physical and the natural as well that comes with it. For example, you'll need professional medical advice if you have medical conditions, things like an ulcer, like things like anemia, or if you're pregnant or nursing. I don't suggest that you ever fast if you are pregnant or if you're nursing. Unless it's a different kind of fast, like a media fast or something like that, or feel very strongly about it. But I really don't suggest that you do that. But yes, don't feel like this is unspiritual to do. If you have some kind of medical condition, talk to a medical professional. You can't like destroy your body for the glory of God. That's not glorifying to the Lord. You know, you can't destroy your body in that way. It's supposed to be a blessing, and you're supposed to be able to sustain it as well. Second, you'll need spiritual counsel if you struggle or have struggled with before eating disorders of any kind. This is very important. This is very important. If you have a past with this, or if you are still walking out health regarding eating disorders of any kind, you have to talk to your spiritual covering. You can't just, you know, like, I'm going to do this for the Lord and it's going to be great. You can't just jump into it without any wisdom. So you need to talk to your spiritual covering for that. And lastly, you need to watch how you go into your fast and how you get off it. Sometimes when we think like, okay, starting tomorrow or starting tonight at midnight, I'm going to start fasting. So like until 11:59, I'm going to like binge eat because I know that I'm going to miss this food. And I know that I'm going to want to eat this later. You know, like you can't do that to your body, and you can't, that's not the kind of mentality that you want to go into it as well. So for example, before beginning a fast, avoid the last big feast. This works against you physically by making your body expect more food, not less. It is best if you begin making your meals smaller before stopping altogether. And it is also advisable to cut out caffeine and sugar from your diet before starting your fast. This is just a very practical guideline. You want to go through, you know, your fast. If you're doing like a liquid fast, or if you're doing just a water fast or something like that, you don't want to just be going through a fast plus like sugar withdrawal plus caffeine withdrawal, like all of those things at once. It's not, you're not going to be a happy camper, you know, and it's not going to be okay until like a week later. So you want to allow your body like the grace to be able to step into it and step into it well. Also, during your fast, try to avoid strenuous physical activity if your fast is extended. If you're doing like, for example, like a 40-day fast or something like that, like please don't be going out to the gym like every day and lifting like you normally do. Like please don't do that, or please don't run a marathon, or you know, play ultimate, you know, or whatever it is that you normally don't do. Don't do that to your body because, yeah, it's just not going to be pretty. And a few more practical guidelines. During your fast, make sure you emphasize not just abstaining from food, but also feeding on God. So this is something that we already touched on. You don't just want to be going on a diet. You don't just want to be going hungry. You don't just want to be bored without your social media. Like what you want to do is fill that space in with something else. And if you're trying to feed your spirit, you should be feeding on God during that time. As you're getting off your fast, and this is regarding food fasts, avoid the first big feast. This is so terrible when breaking your fast, especially if it is a water fast or if it is an extended fast. It is recommended to eat porridge or other easily digestible foods for as many days as you fasted. So if you fast, I don't think that's possible if you did like a 40-day fast to like eat porridge for the next 40 days. But usually what happens when you come off a fast is like in your mind, all the things that you didn't eat during that fast, it's like you fantasize about it. And like the first thing, you already have a list in your mind, like, okay, starting tonight at midnight when I break my fast, my first thing is going to be eating like Oreo cheesecake, like something that you've just really, really been fantasizing about for during that like period of fasting. Don't do that to your body. Your body's not going to take it well. So get off your fast gently. Give your body grace. Especially when you're younger, it's going to give you a certain amount of cushion. Like you fasted for 5 days and you just need to have this like Big Mac. Like you have to break with this Big Mac and you just go for it. Your body's, you know, it's going to crash for a day, but then it's going to be like, okay, after that. But you do that once to your body, you do that twice to your body, maybe it's okay, but you cannot sustain this kind of life. So your body will start paying the cost of breaking fast in this way. So don't do that to your body. Enjoy that porridge, you know, thank the Lord for that porridge and enjoy it. Break fast, you know, with celebration. So that takes us to the very last point, fast with joy. Please fast with joy. There's nothing more miserable and more off-putting than somebody who's not just fasting, but it's just miserable all throughout the entire process. And they're dragging their feet and they're in a grumpy mood. And, you know, the last thing they want to do is hang out with people. Like, don't become a hermit just because you can't handle people eating around you. Like, you gotta fast with joy. Make it an enjoyable experience that you get to walk through with the Lord. Don't become a hermit, especially if you're doing an extended fast for like 21, 40 days. Like you can't last that long without community. Please bring in community with you and do it with joy. So these are all the things that I wanted to talk about regarding fasting. It's a very power-filled, it's a very spirit-filled, it's a time of such great potential spiritually. But we need to go about it with wisdom and with this kind of excitement, this kind of seeing things right, being able to see things with balance and doing things with joy before the Lord. Does that make any sense? Like all the things that we went through tonight? So hopefully this kind of breaks off a little bit of the fear of fasting. There's seriously, like fasting itself is not like so hard. The getting to that first day, getting through that, maybe that first day or two, maybe that's the hardest part. Once you've gone through that, it's actually, it becomes joyful. Your body begins to adjust and you begin to sense a fresh grace, a supernatural grace over yourself. And you, I don't know if anybody here has experienced this, but when you're breaking fast, sometimes there's been times when you've fasted and it's been so sweet. Like there's been such a special way in which the Lord has met you throughout that fasting time, that when you are about to break fast, it's almost like very bittersweet. Like you're like, yeah, I want to eat that porridge, or yeah, I want to get to that Big Mac eventually. But man, like the last 21 days were like incredible. The last 40 days were incredible. There was something very particular about the way in which the Lord met me, or the way that he spoke to me, or the tenderness in my heart, like this ability to pick up on every word that the Lord was speaking. There's something very sweet about that time of fasting. And the reason why I wanted to talk about fasting tonight is because tonight marks 21 days before the retreat. Exactly 21 days before the retreat. Starting tonight, I guess, because, you know, the retreat starts Friday evening. So this marks 21 days before the retreat. And in the same way that Pastor Aaron challenged most of the leaders this past Saturday about taking this time leading up to the retreat as a time of consecration and think about what you want to consecrate before the Lord, how you intentionally want to spend the next 21 days leading into the retreat. The way that she challenged us, I want to bring up the challenge again. If the Lord has been moving and stirring in you to consecrate this time in a particular way, it doesn't need to be like a water fast or a liquid fast. It can also be like fasting from particular things that you know are distractions, like Facebook or Instagram or secular music, if that's what you feel like distracts you a lot, or certain kind of movies or certain kind of leisure activities, whatever it is, it needs to be before the Lord. And you need to know that whatever it is that you will be abstaining from will be opening up space for you to seek the Lord even more intentionally. So I wanted us to take a time to pray. And this is not the altar ministry kind of prayer. I want us to come before the Lord and ask him, how is it that you want me to spend the next 21 days leading up to the retreat? It's not because the retreat is an event that we are just ramping into and once it's done, it's over. But the Lord is doing something very particular. He wants to release something very particular in this season. And a lot of different leaders have been getting this feeling, this gut feeling that something very special is going to be released at the retreat and even leading up into it. And we don't want to miss this window of opportunity. We don't want to miss out on whatever the Lord is trying to highlight during this season. Whatever fruit we gain from this season of consecration. Whatever we gain from this time that we devote before the Lord into seeking, into earnest prayer, into engaging in spiritual warfare. It's going to be fruit that lasts us, not just during the fast, not just immediately after the fast at the retreat, but onwards. It's going to be spiritual fruit that we still get to enjoy for days, for seasons, for years to come. So I want us to take a time just to come before the Lord and ask him, Lord, I know already that I need your grace. I know already that the flesh is weak, but I know that the Spirit is willing. I know that there's something particular in store for me. I know that there's something that you're calling me to press into during this time. It's not about an event. It's not about just these 21 days, but you're giving us this window of opportunity, this supernatural grace to spend the next 3 weeks seeking you. Increasing our desperation for you, stirring up spiritual hunger in us that we've been lacking in the previous season. Lord, let this not be something that I just relegate to a certain kind of Christian or just a certain kind of struggle that I'm going through. But open up our hearts and tenderize our hearts that we would see this time of consecration, this window of opportunity that you're giving us as an open door, as an invitation to press in for more of you. Begin to highlight different things that you're calling us to wean from. Begin to highlight different things, Lord God, that have taken our attention, that have distracted us, that have numbed us to your presence. Begin to highlight those things. And begin to raise up in us a faith, an expectation, a confidence that you're giving us supernatural grace for the next 21 days to really seek you. To put aside every obstacle, put aside every distraction, put aside every idol, and really press in for more of you.